As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotte, and we thank you for joining us on this overcast Monday morning. In the studio with us, brightening everything up, it's James Gearbrand. And down the line from a faraway island they call Ireland, it's Alan Smith. Later on, we'll be discussing what's going on at the biggest club in the world.
But we start with another big week in the Champions League. Last season's runners-up hosts the champions of Germany at Anfield on Tuesday. It's Liverpool.
Neither of whom is the biggest club.
Yeah, I was going to say. Germany, yeah. But we might be upsetting Liverpool fans and Bayern Munich fans.
They both won loads of Champions League titles and European Cups.
Indeed. Bayern have won the last six Bundesliga titles, but it's been 6 years since they won the Champions League. It is at Anfield. Who do you make favourites, Gab?
I make Bayern favourites for several reasons. One, first and foremost, very, very basic. Virgil van Dijk is suspended. Joe Gomez is injured. Dejan Lovren has some sort of hamstring issue. He hasn't played since January 7th. He didn't go on the warm weather training. I can't imagine you would necessarily risk him unless he's had some miraculous recovery. So we may be treated to Fabinho and Matip at center back. And I think between them, they've played center back maybe 12 times in the past year. So I think that's a big factor. I think the other thing is psychologically, it's not as if Klopp's going to tell them, guys, you know, let's not try hard. Let's just screw this. Let's just focus on the league. But everybody's aware of what's next. Everybody's aware there's a huge game coming up at Old Trafford. And then your next away game after that is the Merseyside Derby. Everybody's aware that if you get through those two unscathed, your chances of winning the Premier League go up exponentially. Everybody's aware of the fact that it's been 29 years, and since then, of course, they've won Champions League finals. I think, I'm not saying he's going to prioritize, but I think psychologically, you definitely get that vibe. Bayern are no great shakes, but equally, this is really important to them because they likely won't win the Bundesliga this year.
I tend to agree with Gab, and I think maybe go a little bit stronger and say they should prioritize the Premier League. Obviously, people are kind of looking at Bayern, obviously haven't had the best of seasons, still 2 points off Dortmund, and Dortmund have a game in hand. So in that regard, you'd kind of think that, oh, you know, it's quite an evenly balanced thing. But just like focusing on Liverpool's defensive issues again, you know, we've been saying all season that Van Dijk has been, by some distance, their best player. He's kind of, you know, almost single-handedly transformed how Klopp's team play. And without him, you kind of look at Matip and Fabinho in particular coming up against Lewandowski, and you would sort of worry for them. I actually think the Liverpool obviously having the past weekend off may have helped them sort of mentally in terms of just refreshing them. I don't think the break, you know, in terms of physically, you know, would have been a big boost to them, but I think mentally, because they looked quite jaded in those draws against Leicester and West Ham, despite obviously signing off before the break with a win against Bournemouth, they just looked like they needed a little bit of a break to kind of be refreshed and come back into a kind of just a fresh mind before this run of games. It's kind of hard to see Matip and Fabinho sort of dealing with Lewandowski if Lewandowski kind of turns up in, you know, his best run of form. So I actually think that, you know, would make Bayern favourites as well.
James, you met a man who recently made his 100th appearance for Bayern in the Bundesliga. That was the right back, Joshua Kimmich. What did you make of him?
Yeah, well, Kimmich is obviously, he's a really key player for Bayern, and to the extent that he has not even missed a single minute in the Bundesliga this season. He's an unbelievably durable player. He's also somewhat versatile, but yes, you're right, he's been playing right back. He can also play in the defensive midfield. I went out to Munich at the start of last week to interview him, and I actually really enjoyed it. I think the first thing about him is that a lot of the time when you meet footballers, particularly at, you know, the really kind of elite level that he is at, it can be quite guarded and sort of quite wary of, you know, talking about sudden things and sort of a bit worried, oh, you know, you're going to spin this. But what I found really refreshing is he's really kind of really open. He talked really openly about Germany's meltdown at the World Cup and, you know, sort of said things that, you know, you might not expect a lot of people say, well, you know, it's all over and, you know, we've got to move on. And, you know, he was like, you know, yeah, and it still really hurts me, you know, to think that, you know, I've lost one of my chances to win the World Cup. He talked quite openly about, you know, the team spirit in the squad was wrong. And, you know, when I threw in one of those curveball questions, I asked, you know, do you think Jurgen Klopp would be a good Germany manager of the future? And I think a lot of players would sort of have said, oh, no, well, you know, Joachim Löw is the, you know, he's the coach now and that's what we're concentrating on. And he was quite open. He said, yeah, I think Klopp would be a great Germany manager of the future. Why not? And I think the other thing that I found really interesting is that I think there's, talking of Klopp, I think there's this kind of interesting tension between our sort of old preconceptions of what sort of German football is, particularly with regards to the national team and Bayern, of being sort of very kind of very controlled, very clinical, very sort of disciplined. And obviously there's the kind of vision that Klopp represents, you know, a team that can be sort of very kind of frenetic and you know, play with a lot of emotion. And actually what was really interesting I thought is that Kimmich, maybe surprisingly to me, said, actually, you know, I consider myself a very emotional player. It's very important for me to, you know, play with my emotions and sort of, you know, which was maybe not what I expected to hear. So yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to meet him.
But I think, I mean, that's a great point James makes. You know how I feel about stereotypes and football, and I think Germany moved out of that phase a long, long time ago. You know, you can read Honigstein's book and whatever to explain how they did. And obviously people always maintain some level of national characteristics and stuff, but those things evolve as well. And, you know, Kimmich in particular, when you look back how old he was, and he would have really been in his formative years as a young footballer, when Jurgen Klopp was winning the Bundesliga with Borussia Dortmund the first time around, that's going to leave an impression. Beyond that, the sort of transformation that's taking place and the types of players that German football produces, that's been ongoing, and I think he represents that. But the one thing which I'm really grateful of, which, you know, I'm glad that you asked them, is what they've kept is the ability of footballers acting like grown-ups when they speak and the media treating them like grown-ups. You know, that question about, you know, Jurgen Klopp one day, you know, if there were a good English manager, which right now, you know, maybe there isn't, or at least not at a big club. You know, if you were to throw that question to, I don't know, Raheem Sterling, or like if you were to ask Raheem Sterling, oh, do you think Pep Guardiola could manage England one day? If you were to answer that question honestly, he'd answer it the way Gearbrand did. Oh, no, we're happy with Southgate. Nothing to see here. No, of course not. Well, no. You know, and people take it for what it is. You know, Kimmich is an adult, and he says, yeah, he's a very good manager one day. Maybe, who knows? Because you don't necessarily have that combination, I think, of, I mean, they have tabloids over there too, but they don't, you don't have a narrative that's dominated by ex-players who really only read, you know, those papers where every word is five letters long and where the same three tropes get repeated over and over and over again. And that shapes the national debate. It's like, well, look, Sterling's unhappy. He wants Pep to manage England, and, you know, continuing that analogy. So I think I always find it really refreshing when you talk to these people. It's not like they're all intelligent and cultured. Some of them are. Some of them are complete dopes. But they generally have an honesty, and they expect you to treat their answers with honesty, which is why in your piece today, the headline isn't Klopp, please come and manage Germany and save us from Yogi Löw. Although you were tempted, right?
Yes. I mean, were the headlines in my hands, obviously,
yeah.
That would have been it,
yes.
So it's a fascinating interview with Kimmich, but he's going to have a big job on his hands, hasn't he, on Tuesday, in terms of Liverpool's left-hand side of Mane and Robertson, Alan?
Yeah, he is. I was kind of thinking a couple of weeks back, I was trying to figure out who are the early front runners for Player of the Year, and I was actually, after seeing Spurs and Son had been really good again, I was thinking, there aren't actually too many attacking players that you'd consider in the list at the minute. Obviously, we're only in February or whatever. And I was kind of thinking Van Dijk obviously was a clear nominee from Liverpool. But I was also thinking Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back and Robertson at left back. I think Robertson has, personally speaking, been alongside Van Dijk Liverpool's best player, because like I mentioned a few minutes ago the style has obviously evolved and they're not so kind of free flowing in attack, and it's very much kind of a lot more disciplined, a lot more patient, and so much of that is down to Alexander-Arnold and Robertson as well. It's amazing as well when you think of I know a lot of people in Scotland are quite frustrated in that they've got several sort of players capable of playing right back and left back in such a dearth of options elsewhere in the team, and they're sort of frustrated because they feel like, you know, Robertson is kind of this amazing star player who, you know, the best they've seen in a generation. And I think his growth has been one of the standouts for Liverpool this season. In terms of Mane, I don't actually feel like he's had that great a season, certainly in comparison to last year. And, you know, a lot of that is probably down to the style of play changing slightly, and he doesn't have as many opportunities to break forward into space, and he can't utilise his pace as much. But he has been not so much a disappointment, but sort of not as thrilling as he was 12 months ago.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. The second Champions League tie of the week, pitting England versus Germany, sees Manchester City travel to Gelsenkirchen to take on Schalke. Domenico Tedesco's team finished second in the Bundesliga last season, but they're a long way off that now, Gab.
Yeah, they're 14th. They've basically stunk it up. Again, part of it is they lost some big players over the summer. Part of it is what they were doing last year really isn't working as well. Tedesco is part of this sort of German obsession they have with playing very, very young managers, many of whom have never played professionally. It's kind of like the opposite of this country, you know, where having been a good player is often a big prerequisite. Here, they just go and hand the keys to the team to youngsters. Tedesco's funny because he's German of Italian extraction. He was born in Italy. But his name actually means German in Italian, which I always thought was kind of funny. This was a year people expected him to kind of build on it and maybe say, like, all right, if you can repeat this, you know, you lost Goretzka over the summer, of course, you joined Bayern. If you could repeat this year with this group of players, then we know that you are part of the elite and, you know, you'll be in the on the Nagelsmann route to glory. But it really, really hasn't. It really hasn't happened for him. And I think they're 4 points clear of the relegation, where in Germany, you know, you have a one-game playoff. I wouldn't get too smug about that. And I still think staying up really must be more of a priority for Schalke right now.
So, Alan, was this the dream draw for Pep Guardiola?
I think it's the easiest draw. I can kind of imagine Guardiola giving his pre-match press conference tomorrow, and sort of as he does before every game when they're heavy favourites, sort of preaching that it'll be difficult and sort of outlining two or three of the opponent's strengths, like before the Newport game, for instance. Because it's two-legged, there's no way you can kind of see Schalke shocking City. You can kind of think that maybe, you know, they'll pull out a freak result perhaps this week because they've got home advantage, but over two legs, there's no way you can see sort of a shock like that developing. And I think because of the depth of the squad, obviously the run of games, the aforementioned League Cup final on Sunday as well, that, you know, Guardiola could easily shuffle the pack again, not rest a couple of players, but, you know, make quite a number of changes, and I can still see City sort of, you know, easing their way to victory.
It could, of course, be a homecoming for Leroy Sané, former Schalke player. But while he did play at Newport, he hasn't really been featuring that much in the Premier League. How would you expect City to line up, James?
Yeah, Sané is an interesting case because, to me, I don't think he's played... certainly don't think he's played badly in the Premier League this season. I just think he's been pretty great. I mean, he's got, I think, 8 goals and 9 assists in something like 1,400 minutes of football in the Premier League, which is pretty great. And... it's funny because you're right, he's been in and out of the team over the last month or so, but that actually followed a very good period for him where he scored against Liverpool and then I think had a goal and an assist against Huddersfield. So it's strange. I wonder if, I mean, A, obviously, it's the fact that, as we've spoken about, City have a great squad and they have a lot of really good depth options. And, you know, B, I just wonder if it's a kind of, if it's a man management thing, if Guardiola just thinks that Sané is the type of player who needs a bit of the stick as well as the carrot, so to speak. Predicting Pep lineups is a notoriously difficult game. And I think obviously that the fact that the Premier League title race, you know, we're looking at a point sort of a month ago where Liverpool could have been 7 points clear. Now, obviously, they're level on points. City are in a completely live title race. I don't think there's any kind of, you know, I think there's any question of, you know, them sort of prioritising the Champions League at this stage. So I think for that reason, and also the fact that, you know, as we've said, although Pep will say all the right things about Schalke, as he should, given that they were beaten by Lyon in the group stages, this is, you know, probably as good an opportunity as you'll get in the knockout stages of the Champions League, maybe to rest a couple of frontline players.
When we talk about sort of fixture congestion and how difficult it is to compete on multiple fronts, a lot of times we look at it just from the physical perspective and players getting tired and not recovering from injuries or whatever. But I think there's also a whole mental side to it as well. We're taping this Monday morning. Chelsea haven't played Manchester United yet. But there's a lot of things that can happen. The winner of that game could be drawn against Manchester City in the FA Cup. And then you've got circus and talk and whatever. Imagine it's United or even if it's Chelsea and they have to play them for the 10 millionth time this season. They have the League Cup coming up and you figure, well, it's easy because they won 6-0. Yeah, but it's a one-off game at Wembley. And what happens if that doesn't work out? What happens if he gets drawn to play Barcelona or Bayern Munich in the next round of the Champions League and he comes up against his past? All these things are grating, are draining on players. And for that reason, I would still cautiously give the edge to Liverpool. And I also think, and he's not going to come out and say it, obviously, because he's going to say what every coach says, that, well, I want to win everything. But I think if he had to choose, he would choose the Champions League, because it really would be a feat. You know, it would move him up a rung in the list of Champions League winning managers. He could show that he could win it without Lionel Messi as well, which, you know, some of us doesn't have many critics, but those who still criticize him say, well, it's easy, you've got Messi, you know. So all these things put together, I think in the back of his mind, he would definitely prioritize the Champions League.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It has been a roller coaster season for Real Madrid, winners of the last three Champions League titles, but they are 9 points off top spot in the Liga after defeat at home to Girona on Sunday. The game also saw the 25th red card of Sergio Ramos's career. James, what we...
Sorry, that's for club alone.
just.
He's also got, I think he has at least two for Spain too.
Okay then. So we could say 27th red card of his career. James, when we look to the end of Ramos's playing career, how is he going to be best remembered for all of these red cards?
I mean, it is kind of remarkable, isn't it? Just how kind of, I mean, he's absolutely out on his own in terms of historical red cards. I mean, no, I think when Ramos finishes his career, I think he's, although, you know, for some he's quite a polarizing figure. I don't think, you know, I think ultimately Ramos will be remembered as a great player. I think he'll be remembered as a winner. You know, I think I'm right in saying he is in all three of the Spain squads that won major tournaments. I think he played in Euro 2008 as a young player.
Yeah.
When he played right back. So, yeah, I mean, to be, you know, a mainstay of that kind of historic era of Spanish success and obviously what Real Madrid have accomplished in the Champions League recently, also unprecedented, I think Ramos will get his due when, you know, he retires and the kind of historical assessment is made. But yeah, it's kind of a weird anomaly of his career that he's so prone to red cards.
Let's speak about Santiago Solari then, the manager for Real Madrid. You recently praised him, Gab, with his attempts to bring in the new guard and the younger players. Does that make success then more difficult this season?
Well, he came in as an interim boss and they gave him a longer deal because they had to, but I think in their minds he's still an interim guy. What's funny is this defeat, they lost to Girona at home. For those who don't know, Girona is a team that's half owned by Manchester City and the other half by Pep Guardiola's brother, funnily enough. This was a team that they'd lost six in a row. They were plummeting down the table. So nobody really expected this. I thought they played really well in the first half, could have scored two or three maybe. And then they simply imploded in the second half. But part of it is a lot of those changes that he made, he kind of brought the guys back. He brought Marcelo back, who was terrible again. He brought Asensio back. There's an argument to be made when a team's on the mend, don't mess with it too much. They do have some big games coming up, but then again, you know, they don't have a midweek tie this week, so this could have been a game where, you know, you might have not taken the Girona for granted. Instead, that was really the vibe that you got, especially after halftime, like, who are these Muppets? You know, we got this, no problem, we're Real Madrid. And they paid a really hefty price for it.
It's kind of an interesting feature of this season's Champions League that the three kind of real sort of super heavyweight teams of European football, Barcelona, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, are all to kind of...
Man City thanks you, by the way.
Well, we'll get on to Manchester City, but I mean, those three teams have really been, over the past five seasons, have been the dominant teams in European football. And they're all, to a greater or lesser extent, in transition this season, you would say. And that,
they've not been good. Well, I mean, Barcelona top of the league, but they've not been good. They've been incredibly messy dependent.
Not sure the last time that those three teams were so kind of so weak or so vulnerable in the champion. Well, who knows what happened in the Champions League, but I'm not sure the last time you had a Champions League tournament where those three teams were so in such a phase of transition. And I think that increases the emphasis on teams like Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, who have been the pretenders really up until now. I think there's a real kind of emphasis on them to you know, maybe go and win it this year.
That's a really good point. You know, you could see this, if you take those three as sort of the elites who've consistently done well in the Champions League, the next rung down, the three pretenders who probably more than most have been generally consistently good all season, are Manchester City, Paris Saint-Germain, and Juventus. So this could be the year where you might see a bit of a changing of the guard, especially if, you know, Liverpool do go out to Bayern now for the reasons that we underscored earlier. And who knows, maybe that's the breath of fresh air after so much Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern.
Talking more about Real Madrid, Thibaut Courtois spoke to Belgian media this weekend and said that Gareth Bale spends most of his time playing golf rather than hanging out with Real players, leading to him being labelled the golfer. Alan, Bale has a contract until 2022 in Spain. Is there any way out for him, do you think?
I think there's always a way out. I think the big issue is his age, where he turns 30, I believe, in the summer. And obviously a lot of clubs kind of now look at sort of that age as being, you know, the point where they'll stop paying big transfer fees. And obviously Bale now demands huge wages as well. So I think that's the sort of the big difficulty in terms of him finding a new club come the end of the season. But, you know, if he really wants to go and if the club are happy to let him go, then there's no reason why probably shouldn't be able to get out. In terms of the golfer thing, that's been around for a while, I think, because I remember reading a piece last season in one of the Spanish newspapers where they were just basically having a go at Bell because in the back garden of his home he has created a replica of the 17th hole at Sawgrass, which is that sort of iconic hole with the green is surrounded by water. So he's sort of recreated a replica of that in his back garden, and because of that there was certain Spanish papers were having a go at him for it, and they're sort of blaming his love of golf as the cause for his back injuries in the past few seasons. Also noticeable that other players have kind of suggested that his failure to learn Spanish in the five seasons that he's been there sort of distanced him from the team as well. But then you kind of take Sergio Aguero, who's been in England far longer than 5 years, still doesn't really speak English, and he's had no sort of issues in terms of bedding in with the Man City squad, and obviously going on to great success. I do feel like Bale is sort of underappreciated. The player who's won 4 Champions League titles.
So is everybody else around Madrid.
Yeah, no,
that's the problem.
Well, also the overhead kick against Liverpool, one of the best goals I can remember seeing in several years. Those sort of moments at pretty much any other club would make Bale a legend. It's because of the unique sort of that unique atmosphere at Real, where to become a legend there, you need to do far more than that. But I do feel like he is underappreciated.
Alan made a great point about his wages, and I know people get confused, net and gross, but he makes £365,000 a week after tax. So that is comfortably north of £600,000 a week in gross terms, which is how we speak of wages here, which means that he's earning nearly twice as much as the highest paid player in the Premier League. So for any club to sign him, they would be on the hook for that until at least 2022. And he said that he wants to stay at Real Madrid. That's fine. If you want to stay at Real Madrid, that's fine. Then put up with people making fun of your Spanish. And he does speak some Spanish. It's just extremely, elementary and rudimentary. Probably better Spanish than Aguero's English, to be fair. But then again, Aguero has many more Spanish-speaking teammates than Bale has English-speaking teammates, to be fair, too. Other than chatting to Toni Kroos and Thibaut Courtois, I don't know who else he's going to talk to. So it's a difficult one. I think part of the reason he hasn't been hailed as a legend to the degree that his achievements might warrant, and he scored some big goals in big games, is that he played on a team with Sergio Ramos, who scored just as many big goals in big games, and also, of course, that Cristiano Ronaldo fell until last year. Now Cristiano is gone. The idea was, Bale will take over, and that hasn't happened.
We've got time to speak about Gordon Banks. And Gab, I know you were particularly struck by the coverage that the World Cup winning goalkeeper received after he sadly passed away last week.
Yeah, we had two really good pieces, and through the website and through the app, you can go back and search for them. It's worth it, by Henry Winter and Ollie Kay. I was just struck by what a different era it was, in the sense that he played virtually his entire top-flight career for Leicester and for Stoke, which is part of the reason why he didn't win very much. He won 2 League Cups. I'm talking at club level. That's why whenever, people talk about footballers want to win things and show us your medals, then refer them to Gordon Banks. Same thing when people say, Harry Kane needs to leave Spurs to go win things. Does he? It's pretty remarkable. It's just remarkable the fact that obviously his career was cut short when he was 36 at the time, I think, by that car accident he suffered. And he moves away from the game for 3 years. And then he comes back and goes and plays in the old North American Soccer League and gets voted goalkeeper of the year. Just a phenomenal character. And a really important player, obviously, in the history of English football.
Well, speaking of England and perhaps looking to the future, Declan Rice has declared for the Three Lions, despite having 3 friendly caps for the Republic of Ireland and playing for them at youth level. Alan, what's your thoughts on that?
I think the reaction from quite a number of Irish supporters left a lot to be desired. I know there's been quite a lot of sort of social media abuse directed at Rice for changing. I mean, it's a complex issue. He's just turned 20. He's, you know, had this incredibly quick rise, and even reading back over the statement, you sort of get the sense that he's been surprised by how quickly he's risen up the ranks and how quickly he's become such an important fixture to West Ham. And I think, you know, some cynical Irish fans are sort of suggesting that, oh, he was only playing for us because he didn't realise that he would be able to make it for England, which, you know, is a train of thought. I don't think Rice would ever come to admit that. He's quite young. You need to take sort of youth into consideration here, where he made a decision as basically a teenager that he would play for Ireland.
Because he couldn't decide to play for England as a teenager because England weren't calling
hadn't
him
shown,
up.
Hadn't, no, they hadn't shown interest.
Exactly.
But then, you know, at the same time, he's born and raised in London. He's well within his rights to, you know, feel pride at his sort of his Irish background while being English. You know, nationality is a complex thing, and I think a lot of sort of football fans, and in this case Irish football fans, feel like, you know, you're a traitor for changing or whatever. Well, it's not quite that simple. He can feel both English and Irish. That's not a crime. And the fact that I think England have done quite well, had a successful World Cup, did well at the Nations League. Obviously, his position has been one of the weak links in Southgate's team. And I think that's what's swayed him towards England. Obviously, being overlooked by youth teams has had an effect in the past, and that's why he ended up playing for Ireland. But to sort of suggest that, you know, he was lying and saying he never cared about Ireland, he was just playing for them just because England, you know, didn't realise who he was when he was 16 or 17, is wrong, because, you know, he can play for England, but he can also still care about his Irish background, and he can still feel pride in that.
Football-wise, he cares for England more. Right?
Yeah, but, you know, but the issue is people saying that he didn't care about Ireland and he was just using them because he felt it was his only route into playing international football. But, you know, he can obviously care
like
about
when
both.
You were, Alan, when you were a kid in Ireland and you had a girlfriend and then somebody hotter and nicer came along and you upgraded?
No, never experienced that personally.
No, but I mean, it used to be that if you played an official match, even at youth level, then you couldn't change anymore, right? And then they relaxed the rule. They changed it. At youth level, you can do what you like. And at international level, as long as it's just a friendly match, Diego Costa playing twice for Brazil, for example, then, you know, as long as you fulfill these other requirements in terms of passports and whatever, which are much stricter than back in the imaginary days of Jackie Charlton, of course, you can go and you can play for your country. This rule, incidentally, was generally designed so that, I would say it was designed with France in mind, but it really was. So all those French footballers who were capped at a young age, maybe had like one cap, and then they wanted to go play for Algeria or whatever, because they were never getting called up again. You know, those countries are saying, hey, what's the deal? So-and-so is Algerian, his parents are Algerian, he holidays here, but you can't play here because he was capped for France 10 years ago. That's not fair. It wasn't really designed for the opposite effect. It wasn't really designed for countries in England's situation to go and pick and choose, you know, people who might also be eligible for Ireland or Scotland or Wales or whatever, and then bring them back in. Yeah. But it is a fact of life.
The final thing to say about Rice is that, you know, this is quite a big win for Gareth Southgate and for England moving forward, because central midfield, and particularly defensive central midfield, is a position where England are quite thin, particularly in terms of young players coming through. I think Harry Winks has been having an excellent season, in my opinion, and I think he started to show a little bit more capability on the defensive side, but he's not what you would call sort of an out-and-out defensive midfielder, in my opinion. Obviously, England have Eric Dier, who I think is fine in that position. I think he's a perfectly competent defensive midfielder, but I think, you know, A, he's a player kind of with a ceiling, and B, obviously, it's, you know, I think it's really good for Southgate and England moving forward to have, you know, a good young option in that position. You know, I certainly don't think Rice is let's not get carried away about his ability. I think he's, you know, a promising, good young player rather than, you know, one who's been having an absolutely outstanding season. But I think, you know, it's definitely a positive development for England.
It's time now for our weekly predictions game. And going into this weekend, Gab, I led 13-7 this season.
Because you haven't reminded me enough times.
No, really. No, it's always nice to say 13-7. And of course, you know I mean business, don't you? So I predicted the exact scoreline, correct scoreline, I should say, of Brighton 2, Derby 1. And then I went and predicted a 4-1 win at Newport for Manchester City. I know, of course, you went for a Phil Foden hat-trick and we agreed that we would give you a bonus point for that. But it was just a brace.
You know, the problem with Phil Foden is he's too unselfish.
Right.
You could have easily had a hat trick.
Yes, you're quite right. Easily. And I was worried. I'm not going to lie, I was worried. But as you say, he's unselfish and he just got the two. I also correctly predicted a Wolves win at Bristol City.
Yeah, because you knew that VAR wouldn't give that penalty, right?
Uh-huh,
you knew that ahead of
this. Course, is
it.
Yeah.
You can't have VAR in some games and not in others. It's not fair.
I agree with you on that, but as it is, it was Wolves that won at Ashton Gate. And while neither of us predicted that Solihull would draw at home to Barnet in the National League, I did say that I thought Nathan Blissett would score, which he did. And so it's all looking really good for me.
True, but then I did manage to predict an AC Milan win at Atalanta, and I predicted the correct scoreline. For that reason, plus the points I get for the draw that should have been for Bristol City, and the Foden hat-trick, which really should have been, it's now 13-8.
It definitely isn't. I've extended my lead. It's 14-7 to me.
All right, time is running out here. Okay, I've had enough of predictions, so maybe let's move on to some quick hits. Natalie, one for you. And this is where I take issue with Charlie, our producer, who I suspect wrote this question, which I find rather offensive.
Oh.
Why should I care about Timo Pukki beyond the fact that he has a fun-sounding name? Well, I do care about him because, of course, he's a Finland international. He's been capped a bazillion times. He played for Bromby for many years in European football. And before that, pretty sure he was in Germany. Might have played somewhere else, too. So I am quite familiar with this gentleman. But I'm assuming you're going to regale me now with some sort of championshipy, lower leaguey type thing, because I think that's pretty much his level, no?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's doing very well, it has to be said. He is the top scorer in England's top four divisions. 23 league goals he has scored so far.
That's just because Harry Kane's injured, you know that, yeah?
Of course. Of course, you're absolutely right. As you've pointed out, he is a Finland international. He scored for the sixth game in a row at Bolton on Saturday. It was one of his goals in particular, a wonderful counter-attacking passing move that led to that goal. His form certainly is surprising to Celtic fans. You missed the fact that he played in Scotland, but that might be because he didn't do very well in Scotland. He struggled 5 years ago after a move from Schalke. So you're right about Bundesliga, scoring just seven times in his one and only season. He later actually admitted, I thought Scottish football would be easier than German football.
Instead, it's harder?
Well,
when you're playing for Celtic?
Perhaps. He didn't really adapt very well to life in Scotland, but certainly is adapting very well to life in the Championship at 28 years old. And who knows, the way that he's going, no doubt we'll be seeing him scoring in the Premier League next season for Norwich.
Or maybe getting signed by Fulham for $30 million to lead their
to lead their charge
back to the Premier League.
Okay, Crystal Palace win at Doncaster 2-0. Perhaps no surprise there. But James, you were there. Let's talk about Andros Townsend. Should we be paying more attention to him, or with the wealth of young talent at Gareth Southgate's disposal, has his time come and gone?
Yeah, I think Townsend played really well yesterday. He got an assist for the second goal, just a header back across goal for Max Meyer. Probably should have had another one. Really nice through ball to Batshuayi, which he missed. I think in general, Townsend is having a good season. I think he's a player who, you know, and I don't mean this insultingly, is at his right level, you know, playing for a good mid-table Premier League team. And I think Palace are a good team. Despite what their league position might suggest. For me, I think England have a lot of good young options in the wide positions. Obviously, Jadon Sancho, and obviously then you've got the likes of Reece Nelson.
Morgan Gibbs-White.
Damari Gray. For me, I personally would prefer to see Gareth Southgate develop some of those young players, but that's not really a knock on Townsend. I think, you know, he's a good player. he actually served England pretty well when he played for England. For me, I think his time has come and gone, at least until we see him maybe, you know, hit another level.
Swansea overcome Brentford. Yeah. Sorry, Natalie. Mm-hmm. But somebody named Daniel James steals the headlines with a coast-to-coast run that leaves half the Brentford defence in its wake. It may just be that the BBC tweeted out the video of this, and there was no top-flight football in this country, so we kind of all got excited. But, Alan, is this one of the better goals you've seen this season, or are Brentford's defence really kind of slow and sluggish?
It's not even the best goal mentioned in the quick hits. I thought that Norwich goal that Natalie mentioned a couple of minutes ago was far better, because I think there were about a dozen.
But that wasn't in the FA Cup, so I wouldn't know about it, would it? Would I?
Well, yeah.
Stop it.
But, you know, that goal had sort of, I think it was about a dozen passes from the goalkeeper up the other end really quickly, slick one-touch moves. And I think when you're comparing sort of these sort of solo goals where it's about a player's just raw pace and his ability to speed past defenders in comparison to sort of a team move that requires a lot more sort of to go right, I'll always go for the team goal. But, you know, that's not to take away from James, who, I mean, the way he sped forward, it was incredible. I'm sure Natalie will know if those Brentford defenders are particularly quick or not, but you very rarely see a player who can, you know, on the break will take a very big, heavy first touch and just have the belief that he can speed past everyone and for it to actually come off. And it's quite a nice finish as well. I think James is interesting because obviously he was about to join Leeds United on deadline day last month, had a medical, apparently had conducted all his interviews with the Leeds in-house media for video to go up online and social media, whatever. And then the very last minute, Swansea said, no, we don't want the deal to go through. And the deal, I believe, was for something ridiculous, like $1.5 million, which would have meant he would have been loaned to Leeds for the rest of the season, and then the move would have become permanent in the summer. But for whatever reason, Swansea have decided that, you know, actually, we want to keep him. And obviously, he's worth, you know, a young player with this kind of potential and raw pace is worth a lot more than the fee Leeds were about to pay for him.
Gab, one for you. Now, I take offence at the way this question has been written, because I do care. I always care.
Charlie wrote this.
Charlie is shaking his head.
I know.
Because you wrote this one, Gab.
He's all about denying.
Who is, for those that don't care, who is Christoph Piątek?
Oh, and you got the little head in there. There you go. Sweet.
See, I care.
Yeah, I haven't worked out. I've heard it pronounced Piątek and Piątek as well, which doesn't seem to make sense because there's an A, but who knows? It's one of those people who've really come out of nothing, in the sense that he's 23 years old. A year ago, when presumably he was 22, he was playing in Poland. He did score 21 goals. But, you know, it didn't really generate a tremendous amount of buzz. In fact, he only been capped once when he arrived in Italy, signed for Genoa for €3.5 million euros, and then just kept scoring and scoring and scoring. And he moved to Milan for €40 million in January, and he just keeps scoring and scoring again. He scored a goal that some have compared to Van Basten at the weekend against Atalanta. He's up to 17 on the season in Serie A alone. I have unfortunately made a bet with a colleague where I said, there's no way this guy reaches 20 goals. He's going to regress to the mean. Mm. Doesn't look good for me. Now I will likely owe him a steak lunch. He really is very much an essential striker. He's the kind of guy you just don't see, doesn't seem to touch the ball for long stretches, and all of a sudden he appears and he finishes very well. He could be one of those guys, if he really is this good, and he's kind of proving it every week. I think scouts across Europe, put it this way, if I owned a team, I'd call up all my international scouts and I would go and I would just paddle their buttocks for missing out on him. Same thing if I'm with the Polish FA, I'd be like, what? Why did we not take a look at this guy earlier? I know we have Lewandowski and Milik, but come on now. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to our excellent guests, James Gearbrandt and Alan Smith, who, of course, came to us from the Emerald Isle. And not just that, but the other end, the bit with cork in it, where I am told he was out there trying out for Cove Ramblers Senior. Of course, that was who's the most famous player ever to play for Cobh Ramblers? Also possibly the most famous person ever from Cork?
Roy Keane.
Roy Keane, there you go.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information.
We'll be back on Thursday, looking ahead to the Carabao Cup final, Manchester City versus Chelsea. And in the Premier League, it's Manchester United against Liverpool. And yes, let me repeat this. I don't want to spoil the fun of podcasts and pretending things don't go on when the recording times are inconvenient. But Manchester United do play, or did play, depending when you listen to this, against Chelsea in the FA Cup on Monday. Maybe we'll even devote a word or two to that.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.